It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Right away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And good to get the gang back together here. My partner, Captain Mike Ward.
Man, I'm glad to be here again today, Sean.
I'm glad to get you back here. We get more stories, and we're going to kind of split today's show, as many people are split this time of year. We talk some turkeys here, and then we're going to talk some fishing later on in the show with Captain Wayne Miller.
Yep.
So, and it'll be interesting to hear from Captain Wayne, because there's, I don't know if y'all saw this, we had rainfall.
And really?
I don't know how much it's going to move on the rivers, but I mean, it's been this amazing, you know, we talked about it from an inshore perspective with Captain Bobby and how it's been for fishing there, but it's, I mean, the water levels, we're looking like October water levels while you're fishing in the spring.
It's unbelievable. I've never seen it in my lifetime that I can remember where we had a spring where we had a normal pool of water in the rivers.
Yeah.
I don't believe I've ever seen it. Maybe it's happened. You'd have to go back and look at the records.
I just
don't remember.
It's part of natural cycle. I mean,
sure it is.
You know, I've said this before. You know, you'll be fishing in the river swamp or duck hunting or whatever, and you'll see cypress that's way out from the bank. You go, how did that cypress get there?
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it's because over time, rivers change their course, right? And leave. But sometimes that shows you when there's something that's 20 feet from the closest cypress, you had a real dry year.
Yeah.
And that seed got in there, it grew up enough to be able to
survive.
Because they can survive in the water, no problem, but they got to get up. The seed's got to get up and, you know, get those, you know, the leaves or the needles on a cypress enough to get sun and, you know, feed the tree. So it's happened, but it is. It's a pretty unique situation. And we'll figure out what's happening with this rain, and we'll talk to Captain Wayne about that. On the turkey hunting side, I'm going to put the ball in your court, Mike Ward, because you traveled to Kansas.
I did.
And went up there to chase turkeys. And we have talked about that, and we'll come back to it, like how turkey hunting in Kansas has changed over the decades. But your trip, how was it?
Well, it was good. Let me start off with my season. My season in Alabama has been really kind of tough.
Yeah.
Be honest with you, I've killed one, missed one in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I didn't get a ticket. I didn't get a tag year. I got a tag year and a half ago to go to Kansas. I didn't go. Something came up.
Explain to folks.
A turkey tag.
Yeah.
Used to, you just went out there and bought a turkey tag over the counter.
This goes in the bigger story about their population, but now you got to have a tag.
Yeah, their population went from so many turkeys up there. I mean, you go to a field, it'd be 200 in this field, go down the road, be another 150 over here, go down the road, be 300 over here, to where now you go to a field, sometimes there's none or 5 or 10 or 15. So it really has gotten back, I think, to where it should be. I mean, it looks like a pretty healthy population out there
and
without being overpopulated.
And they really are, like, just like quail populations and all that stuff out there, birds, the rains make a big difference. Here, we do have, like, on turkeys, depending on the kind of spring you have, it can help or hinder the poults.
Yes.
But out there, they can have bad, you know, situations weather-wise that changes the whole year.
Yep.
For population. So good that they've had some good recruitment, you're saying?
It looks to me like there's about the right amount of turkeys out there, to me.
Which is 50,000 per acre.
No. But anyway, let me get back to where I was going to say.
So you got a tag.
You know, I got a tag 2 years ago, okay? And something happened. I didn't go. Last year I wanted to go. I didn't draw a tag.
Didn't draw.
So this year I drew a tag, and I got down to like 2 days before I was going to go, trying to decide whether I was going to go or not. And I called the landowner up there and talked to him. And he kind of fired me up and said, man, I'm seeing a bunch of turkeys up here. You ought to come. I said, okay, I'm coming. You know, so in 2 days before I'm going to leave, I decided to go. So anyway, I went up there. I'm glad I did. Had a great time.
Okay.
I did kill one. I didn't kill one the first day. I got on some turkeys the first day. Of course, they didn't do.
And describe to us people hadn't gone, like, pastures and woods, or what do you hunt out there? What's the terrain?
Well, it's both. It's woods and pastures, but pastures, Never hunted out there in the West, Midwest before for turkeys. Never been. I know a lot of people kill them in the fields with decoys, okay? Mm-hmm. So I've seen that on the TV a million times like you have. So I did that. That's exactly what I did that morning.
Strutter decoy, Jake decoy, hen decoy, what'd you run?
I had a funky chicken.
Okay. That old pretty
and
much
a hen.
Yeah. Okay.
And a hen. Okay. So, but anyway, the first day I didn't kill one. So I decided what I need to do is ride around in the afternoon, find the turkeys in the field late in the afternoon where they're going to fly up right in here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I went and found a group of turkeys. I knew there was at least six or eight gobblers in there. Okay.
And I like that.
And about 10 hens. So I stayed there kind of late, and I didn't watch them fly up. But I said, they flying up right there. I know they're going to be there. So
it's getting pretty dark, and they're in this area.
So the next morning, I go, just so happened, we trimmed a tree out for deer hunting. We hadn't put a stand on it yet, but we trimmed the tree out right where they flew back in there to roost. I said, that's perfect. You know, it's going to be open right there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can set my blind up and set everything up right there, and I'll be able to see. And it was perfect. So I got set up. And sure enough, man, they were gobbling, you know, right behind me. They were gobbling and had four jakes. I had my decoys out and had four jakes fly down and some hens fly down. Of course, the jakes came over and just tore my decoys up.
Those punks.
Yeah. And then the big turkeys, the big gobblers were back behind me, but they were coming. And they got closer and closer, and they were about 50, 75 yards from me, further down the field, and they finally came out in the field, and they were gobbling their heads off, and they saw my decoys. Of course, they came down, and I said, man, this is just perfect. This is easy. Don't get no better than this. So I pulled my gun up, pulled the trigger.
Oh, no, not a click.
A click. I said, oh, no. I turned my gun over real quick and looked, and my shell didn't go off, and there's another shell jammed up in there. So I got two shells trying to get up in my chamber. So anyway, I got to put here. They're out there beating my decoys to death 10 yards from me. And I'm turning my gun over, getting my keys out. I finally.
Oh, my gosh. You're doing all this while they're still out there.
You know, I couldn't get it out. Finally, I got it out. The two big gobblers started walking off and got on down probably about 50 yards, 60 yards from me, kind of where I couldn't see too good.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my gun all. You know, when I clicked my gun, they did putt a little bit,
right.
You know.
And then they went back to whipping the decoys.
They went back to doing the thing. But anyway, I ended up, I yipped a few times. They gobbled, and they started coming back. And then they kind of didn't come back. They kind of quartered away from me. And when I got a shot at about 60 steps, I hammered him with 20 gauge with that TSS.
Wow.
And killed him. So that was a great hunt. It could have been a little better if my gun would. I killed turkey, so it don't matter. It was a great hunt, no matter what.
You know, it's even worse because I was going to say, so you had a click, not because you didn't have one in the chamber.
No, I guess when I closed my shell, close it. When I closed my action. I didn't close
what kind
it
of gun,
hard
what kind of gun is
it's
it?
A Weatherby 20 gauge,
okay.
Automatic.
Because this is like, you know, because the rest of your story makes it the best of the season, but the click thing. So my nephew, who hunts with me.
Yep, you had it happen.
He had a click and a no shot on a turkey this year with me. He then calls me last week or whatever and says, "Hey, by the way, it happened again."
Ooh.
Because last time they thought because his action didn't close hard enough, like, you know, like a Beretta Benelli action needs to slam closed.
Yeah.
To be able, because you could see a dot from the pin on the primer.
Right.
But it didn't go out. It didn't hit hard enough. He had it happen twice with his batch of shells. First time we thought it's because it didn't get slam closed
primer
or whatever.
Probably pushed in just a little too far.
Something
maybe.
Like that. So I was like, oh my gosh. So Mike's having this problem. But not only did you have that problem, you then had another round in there. You had to take.
I had to dig them out of there. I mean,
it's a pain.
I've never had that happen.
Oh,
so
I have.
I'm doing it with my keys,
gosh,
trying to get it out. And I'm thinking, well, this is over with for me. But I finally
in
got
Alabama,
it
would have been.
Yeah, I finally got it fixed up and got him. So that was my turkey. You only kill one turkey out there.
Yeah.
So that was my turkey. So the
numbers seemed good.
So that afternoon, I decided I'd do the same thing. Go late afternoon. I'm just playing around now. Okay?
Right.
So I go late in the afternoon, I see these three or four or five turkey gobblers and some hens in a field, and it's getting late, and I said, okay, I know exactly where they're going to go. So the next morning, before daylight, I get in there and get set up. When you don't know the terrain too good, I mean, you know, I've never been in there.
Right.
It's kind of hard to get a tree right, but I did. I was real close to the field, though. I put my decoys out. I wasn't 10 yards from my decoys. And anyway, all the turkeys fly down, and they all go the opposite direction. You know, the opposite direction of me, down the field, across the ditch. And I'm just sitting there. I'm saying,
that's turkeys there.
Yeah, you know, so I'm yapping, and they gobbling. Now, every time I yep, they gobble.
Well, sure, but they're just not coming the right way.
Two big mature gobblers. And finally, after about an hour, I look up, and here they come. They leave the
hens.
They
did whatever they had. They left
the hens. I see the hens over there. They left them.
They were tired of their crap. They're going to go find a new girl.
I guess they come in my way. So I'm yipping at them. They get out about 100 yards from me out in the field over a little knoll. I can see them, but kind of over a little knoll there. And they just, and, you know, I'd yip every now and then, but I'd slow down my yipping. And finally, they went on down a little bit further away from me and turned and came back and came straight to me. And, man, I will finish up. It was a show after that.
I like it a lot. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. This right now, Mike said he got close to him. That may be an understatement during the break there, showing me pictures without a zoom lens of them, and they look like they're about to get in your lap. Okay, so okay. Welcome back. So, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike was telling us he's out in Kansas, killed one the second day. So you go back the next day, just no
I'm
gun
just
in
having
hand.
Fun now.
Right.
Okay, so I'm just calling them
which
up,
is actually an awesome thing to do.
I
as
learned
well
some
to
stuff.
Learn. Yeah, same for me. Say, yeah, I've been on some of those where either I didn't carry a gun or the birds just never gave me a shot, but I laid with them for hours, and you learn a lot.
You do. Okay, so they're out in the field, and they're straight out in front of me now.
You got decoys out.
I got the decoys out, and the decoys are close to me. They're 10 yards out there or less. And anyway, they kind of go to my left, kind of look like they're going to go on away from me, and then they kind of come towards me, and they're gobbling and strutting and doing their thing out there. And then finally one starts walking towards me, and they don't gobble anymore. They don't do anything. And then the other one starts. They both come. And then they kind of come. And they see the decoy. They saw decoys
the
whole time.
That's
they saw
part,
the decoy.
That's the interesting part, too, is what happens, like, if they come to a decoy or even you're calling, right, a bird that you can see so he doesn't have hens or whatever, when he decides – all right, she's not coming. I'm going to, you know, what goes through their brain when they go from I'm not coming, here I come.
Yeah.
You know?
But they were out in front of me for at least 30, 45 minutes. I'm looking at them, they blowing up and they gobbling and doing the thing. But once they committed to come in, that was the end
of
the gobbling.
Don't you wonder what chains they got? Now we're going.
Yeah, they come straight on in. Of course, I mean, they just romance my turkeys to death, I'm telling you. And that funky chicken,
romanced them.
I'm telling you, that funky chicken was the funniest thing. That one of those gobblers would pick him, and he'd fly up in the air. He'd come back because, you know.
He expected him to.
Yeah. And he'd pick him when he'd come back down. He'd pick him again. He'd fly up in the air. He'd come back. I was laughing at him.
Yeah.
And what I learned is they don't care. I was laughing at them.
Oh, when there's a decoy
there.
They didn't
look at me. I mean, they were full blown up, you know, and they didn't look at me at all. But it was a funny thing.
You can get away with a decoy out, you know, and with the exception of what Chuck and I tried the other day with these pasture birds, and I can talk about that. But, you know, I don't run decoys unless I have, like, if my son goes or somebody like that. Because you can get away with murder.
You can get away with a lot of stuff.
I mean, you can sit and move a gun barrel, move a butt cheek. You can turn. I mean,
they just not looking at you. They're not. No. They just so once engrossed with that hen decoy and that funky chicken. Finally, they just beat that funky chicken to the ground.
Extra funky.
Yeah. And then they got on the hen, and, I mean, they just took turns with the hen about three times a piece, and then they'd get off on the side. I mean, it was a show. Another thing I do, I mean, I'm 10 yards from them. I'd yip. I mean, they wouldn't even look at me. And after I did that like three or four times, one of them came over, got probably 5 yards from me and just looking at me, and then goes back and beats that funky chicken to death. So, I had a wonderful time. That went on in front of my decoys for hour and a half or more.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't like they came for a few minutes and then they saw it was, plastic or something.
Right.
They went on. I mean, it went for a long time. I got 30 minutes of video and my battery died, Anyway, had a great time out there. Got to see all the farmers. Took some crawfish up there. That was a big experience for them. And anyway, we had a great time. Now, tell me your story.
Well, there's not a whole bunch because, like you and I talked, I'd be out last week. I was not here. So
right.
I traveled.
Went to town.
Yeah, so just a couple hunts. But, yeah, the pasture – boil it down. I think I've hunted maybe twice since then, and like a weekday hunt. Usually, if it's not happening, I got to get here to the office.
So, right.
But I hunt the other day. Here you go. So got these two pasture birds that when Chuck Sykes was on the show a couple weeks ago, we talked about these two are like. There's other birds, but how you get obsessed with killing a certain bird.
Right.
There's a pair of them, and they're both. Old birds and got the spurs to show it. So the other day, it's just I'm now giving up of trying to. I'm now trying to get in front of them, like which you should always do. But sometimes you just don't even stay with them where you first think. You let them hit the ground, let them move.
Yeah,
because they're going to go three directions, and there's really no the day you think you know where they're going.
Yeah,
you're wrong.
I know it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, instead of trying to go get up under birds that are gobbling, which is a normal, normal thing, I got a bird gobbling somewhere else on the property. I'm gonna try to get as close in the dark as I can to sit down like a normal hunt. I don't even do it with these birds anymore.
Yeah.
Because the second you get close, they're gonna go the other way. So I let them get on the ground. Now this is late turkey season stuff. It's funny how early in the season you go to any bird. Later in mid-season, you're like, okay, only if he's gobbled this much am I going, and only if he's in the – by late season, you're like, you've been in with the bird so long, you're like, I don't know where he's going. I'm going to let him – I'm not even going – I'm letting him get on the ground, and then I'm going to make a big loop to be somewhere in front of where I think he might go next.
Yeah.
So, got these two birds, gobbling their heads off, hit the ground. They finally give me the direction they're going. I'm like, okay, make a big loop, probably quarter mile or something like that, get around – in front of them and sit down. I'm like, oh, the second I sat down, yep. The hen right here, I'm like, they're following the hens. It's perfect. She's 50 yards around a corner.
Right. Like,
even though it's at a pasture, a corner in a pasture. And I mean, I sit down. As I told somebody the other day, I had the safety off and my cheek on the stock for 30 minutes. Hens come by. And they're all moving pretty quickly. I think they're going to nest.
Yeah.
They're going with them. I see, oh, look at that. That's not a hen coming. A two-year-old who comes, this is how sick I've gotten with these two turkeys. He's 17 to 20 yards from me.
Yeah.
Don't shoot him.
Yeah.
Because the two.
Big ones are there.
They're coming because they're going to follow the hens. That's
sure.
What they do all day.
They always do.
They follow the hens. They were coming this direction. They're following the hens. I don't think I even yelped. I don't think I yelped at him.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and all these turkeys track by me, the hens, and then the two-year-old goes on by. They're looking. I mean, so close you hear the low purr, when they're right on top of you. Any second, I'm going to put the True Glow on that one of those big strutter's heads. 30 minutes go by, nothing. After about 40 minutes, I think, let me just ease up on my knees and look around. Nothing. No idea.
They just gone. They're
gone.
Not gobbling anymore either.
Nope.
They probably got with one hen that was acceptable to them.
There was like a whole University of Alabama cheerleaders worth of hens that had already gone by me.
Yeah.
They didn't follow. The two-year-old was with – and the fact they let that two-year-old run with –
That's weird.
But they didn't. They were right there, and then they weren't. Now, I saw them later in my yard.
Yeah.
As I was getting ready to go to work. So, which is a whole – so they did a 180 at some point and went back the other way. But, yeah, I'm done with – I'm not done with them, but I'm irritated with them.
Well, that's
now, there are other turkeys elsewhere.
That's the fun part, too, Sean. It is. Trying to figure them out.
Oh, I'm going to throw myself a party. If I get lucky enough to kill either of those gobblers this year, we'll have a party in here.
Yeah.
On the show, which, by the way, too, you know, we just celebrated yesterday, 1st of May, the 17th birthday for FM Talk 106.5. 17 years.
Congratulations. That is unbelievable.
You and I have been doing the show since we launched the station.
Yes. Yeah.
So 17 years.
And I was doing it.
Well, we were doing it well before, but I'm talking about here.
That's really unbelievable.
17 years at FM. Yeah, what we're saying is Mike and I have been doing that. We're doing the show before we came to FM Talk 106.5.
Right.
17 years as of yesterday.
That's unbelievable, Sean.
At FM Talk 106.5.
It seemed like it's 17. I mean, if you'd asked me how many years we've been doing that here, I'd had to think about it, but my first thought would be probably 10 years,
yeah, 17,
maybe 12, 10 17. Or 12, maybe.
Yeah, 17.
17. Unbelievable.
So, happy birthday to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, too. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I'll throw a party if I get one of those gobblers.
Well, you should.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's fun hunting a special turkey, you know?
It's been fun.
And you can pass them up when you, especially when you live with them, you know, which you do.
Passing up the two-year-old the other day, I was like, because I'm actually at a point where, because I've frozen some meat, I like to make, weed a lot of stuff I kill at the house. And so it's about time I've gone through all my leg and thigh meat that I cook down in the slow cooker, and I've gone through all my turkey breast. I make turkey salad out of it, and then we do nuggets sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to thaw turkey out. I want to kill a new, you know. And so that two-year-old, you know, I mean, he's a two-year-old, you know, probably inch spurs, 9-inch beard, you know, normal two-year-old. I'd have rolled him, but I was pretty sure that the velociraptors were about to come on. I'm not going to shoot him. And well, so I hadn't eaten turkey this week.
You still got, about
May 8th?
8 days or six days left or whatever. Yep. I'll tell you a quick story up in Kansas, too, that I forgot to tell you about. I took one of the landowners turkey hunting. He's 77 years old, I think, a little older than I am, and he doesn't get around real good. But he used turkey hunting a lot, and I was up there, and I wanted him to go. I wanted to try to kill him a turkey. So anyway, we sitting in a spot, and wind was blowing 30 miles an hour in a field. So we, after about an hour, we said, let's go. Turkey can't hear us. So we went to in the woods, and it was a lot better. I mean, the wind wasn't as bad in the woods. Sat there for about an hour and a half. It's about 12:30, looks at me and says, don't look like we're going to do any good. Let's go eat some lunch. And I said, okay, because I'm going to do whatever he wants to do. And we didn't heard anything. So we got up, and I told him, because he walks a little slower than I do, and I said, just going to be walking out, and I'm going to grab the decoys, and I'll be right behind you.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, you know what happens. I go out there. I pull the decoys up. As soon as I pull the decoy up, 100 yards, maybe 125 yards over a little hill. He hears it, too.
Okay.
He looks at me, and I'm waving at him. Come on back. Of course, he can't walk fast. So by the time we got set back up, we never heard him again. Patience.
100%.
Patience.
Kills turkeys for sure.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about catching some bass. It's our man, Wayne Miller, joining us coming up on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, we're glad to have you here. And we're always glad to talk to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller and talk some bass fishing, or some red fishing, or just some, maybe we just talk fishing with him.
We haven't talked to Wayne in a little while. This is going to be a great show.
Absolutely. Captain Wayne, how are you, man?
Man, I'm doing great. It's good to talk with y'all.
Absolutely. And it's been, you know, something we've been talking about from the saltwater side some, and then we've been talking about it, just what it's like in the woods. It has been abnormally dry spring. I mean, this is yeah. I mean, this is something to have river yeah. stages where they were going through the month of February, March, April. I mean, this is it probably happened before, but it's not anything I can remember.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty unique situation because typically, irregardless, you can go back 25, 30, even longer years. It's hard to remember a year when we got to this point that we have not seen the Berry steam plant reading at over 7 feet, you know.
I mean, normally that happens in January. We start that in January, yeah. and we hit it so many times from there on in.
Yeah. But you know, the flip side of that is this. You know, with the low water, obviously, we needed the rain, and I'm glad we're seeing these fronts come through now. But from the standpoint of the Delta, I can tell you now, we're moving into we're on another full moon cycle right now. And this past week, I mean, I saw another wave of fish, a lot of fish coming up spawning. We have had a fantastic, year this year with spawning fish.
Now, and remind folks, too, you've told us before, but it isn't like, hey, it's this month they spawn. You said this starts, what, January, February, and goes?
It'll start in December a lot of years, you know, and we'll see fish. Because right now, I mean, you would think, just because of the fact that we have had a little bit of, hot weather already this year, but you would think that water temperature is extremely high already. But, a lot of the main rivers and a lot of the bigger creeks, I mean, the last 2 days I've been out, I've been seeing 74, 75 degree water.
Wow.
I mean, what is ideal water temperature, for fish,
know,
from the standpoint of in the spring to spawn? I mean, around 72 degrees. So, it's just been a great year for that. And, even though it has been very unusual, I mean, and, there are benefits to high water, obviously. Mm-hmm. The fish, they get back in the woods and they have access to, forage on crawfish like nobody's business. But man, I tell you what, the fish, I have not seen, any detrimental effects on the fish. I mean, the fish I've been catching are really healthy. I mean, in great shape. So, I don't see any negatives associated with what we had this year, even though it was very unusual. But I'm always content in the fact that Mother Nature probably knows more about taking care of itself than we do.
100%. Yep. I'm glad you said that, because I thought through this whole process that while we go, okay, well, high river year, they get back there and forage, like you said, but there's benefits we may know and benefits we may not know to a super low year like this too. Stuff that's all part of the cycle, you know?
Yeah, it really is. But now what we are seeing right now, all this has unfolded over the last several days with this series of rains that we had, and no doubt about it, man, we needed the rain, in a drought.
Big
but
time.
Now what we're seeing right now is the Tom Bigby got a big jump on it. If you look up, well up the Tom Bigby River. And then Alabama got a pretty good jump on it. And the Bama's going to turn around pretty quick by about Monday or Tuesday and start falling. But what we're going to see down here right now, the projections have, the Berry reading going just a little over 6 feet. So,
which is not much. I mean, dealt with, that is nothing.
Yeah. I mean, usually this time of year, we're excited if it's not at 11 or 12.
Preach.
Wayne, let me ask you this. Me and Sean were talking about it. Now, maybe it has happened, but I cannot remember having a whole spring like we've had with no high water. Has it happened? Do you remember it? I don't remember it ever.
I remember a couple of years, Mike, where we just had maybe one event. But as far as not having any at all, I don't remember it.
Yeah, I sure don't remember it. Out of all the years that I used to bass fish, all the tournaments and stuff, year-round, all that stuff, it was always normally the 1st of June, the middle of June, the water start coming down to where we could get up the river and fish the Alabama Tombigbee River. But till then, there was no chance to go up the river. Now, it might come down for a few days or maybe even a week, but then it'd jump right back up. But where you could go consistently up there and fish the rivers, up at Tombigbee in Alabama, it was generally the middle of June.
Right. Yeah.
So,
it's just historically, that's what we've seen. So this has been a very unusual event, but I can tell you, man, like I say, the quality and the quantity of the fish, I have not seen any detrimental effect to it. And I mean, just the sheer fact that, they're not having, those tremendous swings in, water depth and current and everything else, I think will be a positive for the spawn for the year.
That's why I was wondering, too, are we looking at 2 years from now, seeing that age class show up, in catchable size fish or 3 years?
Right.
I mean, you get these kind of, something happened back then. They had all, why have we got so many more fish this year? We'll be asking, in a couple of years and go, oh, yeah, it was that good spawn year.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a real surprise because, I mean, it's amazing to me. Of course, I'm on the water at least, 4 to 6 days a week. And all my close friends, I mean, we've just all been like anticipating it. It's just, our typical conversation since January has been, well, when's it going to happen?
Yeah. Typically, too, Wayne, you're not able to fish the river like you'd really like to because the water's high and it's muddy and all that stuff. So have you been fishing the rivers a lot?
The main rivers have been absolutely fantastic over the last month.
I would think so, Wayne.
And, the reason for that is, and I know we talk about this on the show routinely, but, all these fish don't spawn at one time. So, you have a lot of fish that spawned early in the year that have already, and they'll hang around and, they'll be around the fry. There's typical movements on these spawning fish. But, after a couple of months, they're going to start migrating to where they're going to spend the rest of the year.
Right.
And for a lot of those fish, they move out of these creeks and they get away from the flats and the bays, and they move back out in the main rivers. And that's what I've been seeing. And I mean, I've been doing, it's not just me. I mean, I see other people out fishing the main rivers and doing really well. And, one gauge of that is, typically, especially in March and April, typically our main rivers, you stop the boat and they look like you could walk across them.
I know it.
but now, I mean, the water has been absolutely gorgeous, man.
I bet it has.
You look on the Mobile and it's almost got that green tint that you see in the fall.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like September water.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So, there's real benefits and bonuses to that because, I love to transition back out to the rivers as quickly as I can because, a lot of your creeks and your lakes, they just get pounded pretty hard, especially if you're out there on the weekend. And so once you open up those rivers, it increases the fishable water tremendously and kind of dilutes, having those big crowds in specific areas.
I would think with the rivers, too, being down, the water being clear, that the grass is probably having a good grass-growing year.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, because a lot of times it's muddy in the river, and the grass don't have an opportunity to grow till, later on in the year when it gets clear where, get a little sunshine to the bottom to where the grass will grow.
Yeah, well, it's I've really enjoyed this, so far this year. I mean, it's just been nice You know, and what's amazing is typically one of the first things we have to consider when we think about, well, where am I going to go tomorrow? You know, we have to think about the river stages because normally, you know, well, I can't go up to Mount Vernon because everything up there is flooded, and I don't want to launch at Live Oak because everything on the Bama is blown up right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been able to go pretty much wherever we wanted to go.
Yeah. So, have you fished up the river some?
I have some, but, you know, I spend most of my time in the middle and lower delta.
Right.
Okay, well, I want to do this when we come back from the break. Of course, there's always a question for Captain Wayne, what you catch them on, and we'll see what it is with the you know, conditions out there. And when we say M, what you catching them on, well, we think bass, but there's another fish that's makes itself known in the Delta, and Captain Wayne's been in a bunch of those too. We'll talk about that when we come back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and always fun to talk to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller. Which, by the way, before we go any further, that tease I set up before we went to the break.
Yep.
Captain Wayne, people want to get a trip booked with you this time of year, anytime of year. How do they get in touch with you?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
And because Captain Wayne keeps a low profile in the internet and social media, y'all, if you ever want to get trip booked and you didn't write that number down, just send me an email at the station or text me when I'm on the air, and I'll get you his number.
You know, the other thing too, Sean, Wayne, I'm sure you will take people just riding in the Delta if they want to just go see the Delta, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I do, Mike. Actually, you know, you'd be surprised how many trips I book every year, people that just want to, you know, I mean, see the Delta. And you know, I've told people this, you know, it breaks my heart actually when I think about it. I think about all the kids that live, you know, both in Mobile and then on the Eastern Shore that go across that causeway every day.
Yep.
And grow up right here and look up there and, you know, and never get an opportunity to go up and really see the Delta.
As we talked about that on the show a week or a couple weeks ago, whatever, same thing. You know, people drive across that causeway all the time, sometimes every day, and they've never been in that Delta. And I'm going to say it's a large majority of them, probably in the 80, maybe even 90-something percent of the people that live here that have never been in that Delta.
Yeah, you know, I would love to see if they had some way to the state to generate a tour boat, you know, where they could take school, you know, classrooms.
They're working on that now with the new Five River Center. Plus, shout out to Mike Bunn over at Blakely, Delta Explorer and stuff like that. They can, you know, I've taken the tours with him, the historical tours, but I think they take school groups too. I need to check with Mike, but
yeah,
but get out there and see it. It would be hard though to go on a tour like that in your boat and then go, don't you want to catch some bass while we're here?
Yeah.
Or maybe they want to catch some redfish. So we've got a few minutes left here. You've told us over the years, you're focused on bass. That's what you're targeting.
Yeah.
But the number of redfish you catch, you said this year has been something.
Yeah, I mean, over the last 4 or 5 years, it's just, I've seen an increase in it every year. This year, just like last year, it was just, it's incredible. I mean, right now in the middle Delta, on both the main rivers and in some of the bigger creeks and all that, I mean, you know, we routinely catch redfish. We're not targeting them. I'm fishing primarily with, I catch a lot of them on spinnerbait.
Yeah.
I catch a lot on, you know me, I love to throw a watermelon chartreuse tail lizard. That's not a secret.
No.
But believe me, anybody that fishes this Delta, if you throw it, you're going to catch fish on it. And it just so happens it's a killer bait for redfish. So, you know, I have quite a few interactions with them based on that one bait right there.
What size redfish are you catching this time of year? Is it slot fish, big fish? What do you got?
Right now, we're catching a lot of good slot fish. But, you know, what's amazing to me, though, Sean, is, you know, up here in the middle and the lower delta, what I've seen over the last 4 or 5 years is, you know, we're catching a full range from the standpoint of the size on the redfish. So it really makes me wonder, I mean, are these fish, you know, are they resident fish? And I've got to believe they are. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, I think the slot ones for sure. I mean, I think we probably have a mix. I think we have new ones coming in and out, but I think we have resident on the slots. My question is on the bulls, because the way I understood it, they had to go offshore to breed, but they dang sure are in that delta. I mean, the number of times I've been in, you know, in bull reds, I mean, been trout fishing in the fall, it's bull reds up there, big enough they're taking my cork, you know, my rattle cork. They're not even taking the voodoo shrimp, but they're taking the rattle cork itself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some big bulls up there.
Yeah, there really is. But, you know, we're not seeing those big bulls right now, but I mean, you know, and it's not just specific to me because, you know, a lot of my friends that fish, you know, and they have different areas that they really enjoy fishing, you know, just like all of us. I mean, we've got different stretches we love to fish, and we all kind of have different techniques we like to use. But I just hear it. I see that same thing mirrored from them from the standpoint of catching these redfish. So I know it's not specific to me or something that I'm doing.
It's I know every day changes, so this is kind of a hard question, but this time of year, are redfish 5% of the fish you hook in a day? Are they 1%? Are they 15%? Like, generally, what do you think?
You know, out on the main rivers right now in the middle and the lower delta, I'd say probably between 5 and 10%.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah.
Old surprise there when you're looking for green trout and you get you old redfish.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Now unfortunately, they're kind of like a gremlin. You know, they'll give you a spinner bait back and you're like, what is this?
Yeah, what am I going to do with this thing?
They tied it in a pretzel and headed it back to you. So other than spinner baits and the aforementioned soft plastic, anything else you're throwing? We got about a minute left. Anything else people should have tied on?
You know, I've caught a lot of them over the last 2 or 3 weeks on shad-colored crankbaits. And you know, that reference back to Mike's point about moving out in the main rivers, because I'm already throwing shad crankbaits out on the main rivers, catching bass on that, but I've caught a lot of redfish on those crankbaits also. And that's, you know, medium to deep diving crankbaits anywhere from 4 to 10 feet.
Of course, you say crankbait, Mike gets all excited.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're throwing crankbaits on the main river through the month of April and going into May, amazing. Amazing stuff.
It really is.
Captain Wayne, we appreciate it. We'll let you get back to doing what you do, and that's catching fish in the Delta. Get you back on soon, and we'll be talking about, heck, it won't be long until we're talking about maybe a summertime pattern.
Oh, man, that'll be great. Well, man, y'all, good luck on finishing out your turkey season.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll be doing that, and then we'll come bother you on the water. There he goes, Captain Wayne Miller, and we're wrapping it up for this week. Do it again next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.